Thank you for tuning in to the Dust Sign Podcast. My name is Dustin Mader, and I'm a visual artist. I've always been fascinated with the creative muse in others and in myself. In tonight's episode, we'll be speaking to the musical extraordinaire Gabriel Ayala about life, inspiration, and what's next in the musical future of Indian country. Thank you for coming on tonight, Gabe. I really appreciate it.
No worries. Dustin Tenyawa to everybody out there.
I've really enjoyed your music since the first time we got to meet back at the Chickasaw Chamber Music Festival. I think it was in 2012?
Yeah, it's been some time. Unfortunately, that kind of just dissolved, but it was an amazing festival that I was able to be there 2 years in a row, so... Big shout out to Jerry Tate out there.
Absolutely. Well, for folks who don't know you, who are you and what do you do?
That's a great question. What defines me? Well, I'm an indigenous male. I'm a man of prayer first and foremost, a traditional singer in my community, preservation of our language and cultural doings. But as a professional, I am a musician. Since I was young, I've been a classically trained musician and now a multidimensional artist of sorts. I also create handmade wearable art, aka jewelry, and also visual artist as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, calling you a musical... just limiting you as a musical artist is so so limiting in what you do. Your ledger work is absolutely fantastic. It's definitely inspiring to see your stuff and the creative juices and how they flow with you. What inspires you?
Everyday life. Just the fact that I was given another breath this morning. I mean, that's inspiring in our traditional ways. We're always trying to do better today than we did yesterday, trying to live unselfishly. So it inspires me to see others really excelling as well. I mean, that's really motivating to see others doing well for themselves. I know a lot of times in our careers, you know, we always feel like we're against everyone else. And for me, I've always lived by the mantra of I'm only in competition with myself. I need to be a better me. And that's really what I try to do.
Absolutely. I find that in like the Native art community, I think that when people see that you're sincere and that, you know, you're not a poser, that they're willing to help, and this kind of ethos of when the tide rises, we should all rise with it. It's kind of like our tribal leader, Governor Anatobi. That's one of his mantras, is that, you know, when the tide rises, we should all rise with it. And I really like that, and I like that elevation that we have in Indian countries, you know, like the Native art scene, where it's like someone's got the door open and they're trying to hold it open for as many Natives as they can.
Yeah, that's a really beautiful thing, and you're right, there is a different camaraderie amongst our people, and I definitely welcome that, and I try to lend my support as well to others, you know, that reach out to me.
Yeah, absolutely. This one's a bit of a harder question for some folks, but what are you doing to be a good ancestor?
Well, I think it's within our cultural preservation. To ensure to our youth that our songs are continuing, our ceremonial way of life, and that's just directly in our community. But I think what's more important is to show that we are still resilient as a people, regardless of over 500 years of these stereotypes that have, you know, come up from all these dances with wolf stereotypes that we're all Plains Indians, which is definitely not who we are. We have our own individual identity, and I think it's important to share, not teach or educate, but to share with other cultures and communities that we are still here and we do still exist. And I think that's what's important about being an ancestor, or as you were saying, you know, to make sure that that preservation of our culture still continues, and of course mainly our identity specific to our own communities and tribes.
It definitely feels like it gives you like a sense of a greater purpose when you're not so much thinking for your own, necessarily always for your own ends, but you know, how will the cause and effect you know, in relation to the next generation and generations that come after. You know, that kind of forward thinking is, I think it's just such a beautiful component of our shared people's culture.
Yeah, most definitely so.
What are you working towards as an artist? Is there like a narrative or a theme? I know with me, when I paint, after the fact, or I'm creating something, it's usually always after the fact that I can kind of see my subconscious telling its own story. Here I think I'm in the driver's seat when really it's the one that's down below that's really controlling things. So I kind of see those nuances in what I'm working at. But for you, what do you see?
You know, I think that's a great point that you say. You think you're in the driver's seat and realize that you're just a passenger along for the journey sometimes. And of course, I think as Indigenous people, our storytelling has always been kind of at the heart of our traditions, you know, sharing stories, whether it be traditional stories or just stories around a campfire or stories around a dinner table with uncles and aunties or grandfathers and grandmas and just sitting down. For me, music has always been that for me, of trying to tell a story, or more kind of to paint or to create a soundtrack for a moment in life for me. So when somebody hears a composition of mine, they're actually hearing an actual soundtrack to that specific moment. And then as I got into being as a visual artist, I wanted to then tell a story through my actual painting to show people that continuation. And for me, as I'm painting, I'm hearing the music that I feel that should accompany it, which is really cool. And it's just trying to continue those traditions and tell my story and to create awareness for some of the things that I'm actually painting as well.
Indeed. What genre of art do you enjoy creating most? As an artist that has multiple disciplines, is there one that kind of like is your go-to, like the first thing you go to and you're like, ah, even if it's just for a few minutes?
You know, being that I'm so all over the map with from music to creating wearable art to creating ledger art, or what I call musical art, I mean, sometimes I dabble within each of them within, you know, a couple of hours, just because I start maybe by playing my guitar or I'm on a piano, and then the next thing you know, I see the sheet music and I'm like, this could be a beautiful canvas here. What am I doing playing it when I should be painting on it, you know? So which is kind of funny. So I guess we all kind of have, you know, some kind of attention deficit disorder, you know, because as an artist, I'm just drawn by creativity. And again, something may spark something else, and I don't want to lose it. I don't want to make a mental note and say, don't forget to paint this. I jump right on it to jump in the moment and live in that moment and make sure that I can capture what my mind and my heart and my soul were kind of all telling me to do. And again, and go from there. So again, to say that I'm real centered like that, I don't think a lot of artists are. I think we jump by what our emotions tell us instead of just our mind.
I like that. What is a favorite or most inspirational place where you can kind of go to and it just kind of resets the computer, if you will?
You know, being around ceremonies, that for me is the most important thing. To be around our people that are singing and in prayer and that are all with that intent of trying to do something better in this world, that's what recharges me. That's what fuels me be a better person. When I'm looking at my brother or sister next to me, and I'm looking at children running around that are safe at ceremonies, you know, that they can run around, we don't have to worry that they'll be hurt. We can know that our elders will be fed and cared for. That for me is a paradise. That's a heaven on earth, if, you know, if I can, you know, use that quote. It's just the most beautiful place. It's hard for me to leave ceremonies. I always tell people it's really hard because we have to come back to this world that has so much anger and hatred and ugliness, where women are not honored. They're not viewed as being sacred, where children are beaten, where men and women are abusing alcohol and substances and not caring for their children. Yeah. Again, it's a pretty deep question for me, or the answer, because that is what I live for, is being at ceremonies. I mean, again, that fuels me and prepares me for those spiritual battles that we face all year long.
Indeed, I you know, it's made me think of the you know, the Gnostic Gospels, where they asked Christ, you know, when will the kingdom of heaven come upon the earth? And he says, the kingdom of the Father is spread upon the earth. It's just that man does not see it. And getting that heaven now, and your moment of that place of bliss at ceremony, that's really touching on that, my man.
Yeah, thank you.
What is something you're working on right now that you'd like to share with the audience tonight?
Well, you know, ledger art, or what I call music art, since I primarily use sheet music as a canvas as opposed to ledger. And for me, it was just one night back in October that I saw a sheet of Beethoven, and I thought that would be beautiful as a canvas. And next thing you know, I have over 70 paintings now. So I haven't even been painting a year now.
That's awesome.
So it's kind of, yeah, it's just kind of a newfound passion that has evolved, and I've grown into my own style by, you know, looking at what other people had done in the past and thinking where it should evolve. So for me, this next step in this journey of visual art is a book. And when I was young, being raised by my grandmother, she would always share stories with me, traditional stories, and up late at night, she would be telling me these stories and teaching me these traditional songs, and I always remember that. And when I started drawing and painting these things in these scenes, I thought, you know, one day I would like to recreate one of my grandmother's traditional stories into a book for children.
Yeah.
So that's actually what I'm working on right now, is my first book. It'll be a children's book, and it'll be all in my language, exclusively, so that it forces our children and our community to really embrace our language. Not that they haven't, but I just want to have that resurgence and make sure that it's not being lost. So the first edition of this book will be purely in my own language, and then months later I'll release an edition in English.
That's fantastic, my man.
So I'll do all the illustration, and then of course all the language as well. So it's pretty exciting for me.
That's awesome, and you should be very proud of that. You know, it's one thing to learn the language, but it's almost something else to create content for the language bearers, and it encourages more people to look at it. Because, you know, some of the complaints that I've heard from, like, traditional language speakers is like, they just have nowhere to utilize it, you know. And to provide a place, even if it's, you know, just as a book, you know, them reading it in the language, that's got to be really fulfilling to kind of working on something like that.
It is, again, you know, it's very, you know, for me, it's just kind of an homage to my grandmother to, you know, always pay respect to the woman that, you know, gave me, you know, or made me who I am. I always tell people that I'm a reflection of all the beautiful things that she was. And again, it's just another way for me to share her life through me. You know, if not through music, but now through storytelling and through the artwork that I'll be creating. So, yeah, I'm really excited about this project.
Sounds like it. What research do you do when you're, like, putting together a piece? Is there... wait a minute. Before we go any further, I have to ask, on the sheet music, is this your music that you've wrote down and then you're painting on top of? Can you go into more detail of like, what material are you using?
So as a native musician, I am a classically trained musician, so I'm kind of a snooty guy, I guess, man. I always thought Bach would make an amazing canvas, so I've primarily used Bach. So I've also, from some of his partitas, partita number 1 through 6, for piano, I've also done Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata, I've also done Chopin. And I even had a commission of a tango piece recently, which was pretty cool. So thus far, I've only used existing classical sheet music. But on my next series, it'll be all of my original compositions. I released an album a while back called Shades of Blue.
I have that album.
Yeah. Oh, it featured 11 original compositions of mine. So I'm now going to go backwards and now paint a piece or artwork for each of the compositions. And then release that as a series of paintings. So I'm really excited about that. But again, those will be on my original sheet music. So that's going to be pretty cool, I think.
Well, hey, maybe you should make that your second book. Make it like one of those. I don't know if you remember back in the day, it might date myself, but I remember being a little kid and they would have like a book and it came with like a little record and you would put on the record and you would read the book with the music or the accompanying sound effects for the book. God, I must have been a little guy, but it's almost like something you could do with that in regards to that album and how those pictures relate to that album in those particular songs.
For sure. For what my hopes is that when I tour, I'll play the album in its entirety with my actual paintings on a screen lit up behind me, so that they can actually see what I intended. So now the soundtrack will finally have the visual, because most of the times I tell the people, you know, what it's about, and then I tell them to close their eyes and look at the movie that's playing on the inside of their eyelids. Now they won't have to. It'll be up there for them to see.
Excellent.
Yeah, thank you, man.
What do you hope for the future in your field? Like, in the next 20 years, what do you want to see, what do you want to see the landscape to look like?
Well, as a musician, I hope that we're not obsolete, man. and I say that only jokingly, because nowadays, and I may get some flack from this, but everybody's a music producer nowadays. Anybody with a laptop and a finger is a musician. They can hit a space bar and all of a sudden a kick drum comes on, and they hit the number sign and all of a sudden there's a hi-hat, and they create these, you know, EDM or backtracks, and all of a sudden they're musicians. I think musicians is a dying art, man. It's kind of sad to say that, but I haven't met a lot of musicians lately that I know with music degrees and people that are actually, you know, trained in their field. And it's very disappointing. For me, my hopes is to change that. I'm working on a foundation called Music is Medicine right now, and my hopes is to go onto reservations and teach kids how to read classical music and learn how to play the guitar.
Oh, wow. That's excellent.
Yeah, again, you know, it's really, I'm in that stage, I think, of my life, and that I'm realizing that I need to give back more than I've received. And I've received tons, man. I always tell people I've lived the life of 1,000 men. So for me to give back, I'm trying to give back in so many different ways to not just my own community, but other communities that, you know, I feel that could benefit. And our youth is really my focus. I think our children, you know, need that outlet. They need that medicine, you know, to heal themselves. For me, it was my only addiction in life. I mean, I never drank, I never smoked, never did drugs. But nowadays, children are so susceptible to getting on this wrong path, on this, you know, native road. And for me, I just want to hopefully instill some of those values and show them what it did for me, and in hopes that it can maybe give them at least one outlet to instead of abusing themselves with anything, that they can heal within.
Yeah.
You know, so again, music is what I'm thinking, you know, is a dying art. So hopefully in 20 years I'm still playing. Hopefully there's tons of other little native kids out there playing Bach, man. What an amazing thing it would be, man, to see all these little res kids coming out and playing concerts and playing Scarlatti and, you know, Chopin, you know, and all this great stuff, man. I mean, I would definitely be blessed, man. I'm sure Jared would dig that as well, man.
Absolutely.
Yep.
What have been some of your more memorable responses that you've had to your work?
You know, I've been very blessed in all aspects of my life. And I remember as a younger musician, I remember at the beginning it was kind of like I'd show up to a performance and the typical stereotype, well, where's your native flute? And I say, well, I have one, but that's not what I do professionally. You hired me as a musician. Did you not know I was a guitarist? You know, and it's unfortunate that stereotype still existed, you know, some 15 years back, you know, the 20 years back. And I was like, but the thing is, I would win them over. And at the end of the concert, they'd come up and say, oh, my God, we were so glad that you brought your guitar. It's an amazing thing that you're doing. So again, I think it's important to kind of win the audiences over and kind of break those stereotypes continually, even amongst our own communities. Because I've had performances where I show up, you know, on the res, and people are like, "Oh my God, what are we going to hear? He's going to be playing some classical and jazz and flamenco." Well, we don't want that. And then the next thing you know, people are, you know, coming rushing my table and wanting to take me home with them, you know, in the form of a CD. and again, that's a beautiful thing to see that and feel that. And again, it's crossed over amongst my wearable art and in my ledger art, or musical art, again, as I call it.
That's so cool. Let's see here. I'm trying to think. We got a couple more questions here, and then we'll
kind of wrap up.
I really do appreciate you taking the time. I know you're a busy man with lots of stuff going on. And
I always say never busy, always creatively engaged.
What is your strongest memory from childhood and relating to you know, your talents? Is there like a moment? I know for me, it was when I was a little boy. I was about 2 years old, and I can really say with confidence that that's probably the moment that my current consciousness kind of turned on, when I was getting a bit of praise from my mom drawing like a train and an engineer. And she went, "Oh, okay." And then she went to look at it, and she goes, "Oh, wow." And she told my grandpa, she goes, "Hey, Dad, come here, check this out. Dustin's really drawing like a train and engineer. It looks like it."
Nice, man. Yeah, that's hella cool. I think for me, I was practicing, man, and I was one summer just practice 10, 12 hours a day. lived and breathed music.
Yeah.
And I was practicing, and I had one of my relatives call me to dinner, and they're like, come eat. I was like, all right, I'll be right there. And I finished practicing, and I got to the kitchen, and I'm going to date myself here now too, man. And because I'm sitting at the table, and she looks at me, and she says, what was that tape you were playing? So I just dated myself. Tape, man. Ain't nobody know what tape is anymore, but damn it, I had tapes, man. And I said, what do you mean tape? And she goes, oh, what tape was that you were listening to? I said, that was me. And she, are you serious? That sounded great. I was like, I'll be back. And I literally ran out of the kitchen and just went right back to practicing. Like, it was that inspiring, you know, to myself to hear somebody else think that, you know, I was getting on this level, you know, of achievement that, again, for me, I mean, it was one of the big highlights of my career, man, you know, of just having your own family have that acknowledgement, but subconsciously, because they didn't even know it. So I was like, wow, man, what a crazy thing.
It's indeed, and really indeed. That's funny. What was a real life situation that inspired you and kind of inspired your work that was like very specific?
Oh man, that's a deep question, brother. This is one for that I'll never forget, man. I was on the way to a concert in New Mexico and driving out there, and as I'm driving on the highway going, you know, 75 miles an hour, I realize in front of me there's a car kind of swerving, and I'm like, what the heck's going on? And I see one car shoot off to the left, another one shoot off to the left, and I'm like, what's happening here? Next thing I know, this SUV cuts right in front of my truck, and I T-bone them going 75 miles an hour. I hit my brakes, man, and I tell you what, man, your senses are heightened by like a million. I mean, I can still tell you that the kids in the back weren't wearing seatbelts. I remember a lady hitting her head against the windshield and glass flying towards me. You know, I hit my chest on the steering column. It was crazy, man. It was the worst thing I could ever have been a part of. Next thing you know, I mean, I lost time. I don't know what happened. Next thing you know, I'm standing on the side of the road outside my vehicle, and I hear kids crying, women screaming, people running, and I'm like, oh man, I wonder how many people died in this wreck, man. What happened? And amazingly, there were no tragedies that day. The only one that went to the hospital was myself. And for me, as soon as that happened, I mean, I went into prayer mode and just thought, you know, please don't let any of these children be hurt, man, for somebody else's, you know, idiots, you know, move. So ultimately, that person had missed their turn on the highway and didn't want to wait till the next exit, so they just wanted to cut through the median. Yeah, what an idiot, man. And so that's what happened, man. And through that, next thing you know, I can't play guitar for like 4 days, man. My fingers are like sausages, man. I can't even bend my fist. I have cuts all over my chest from the glass. I have bruises all over my body, man. It was ugly. I'm lying down in bed. And on the fourth day, I forced myself to get out of bed. And I grabbed my guitar. I said, it's enough of this self-pity stuff. You know, get up and stop whining, boy. And I forced myself. I grabbed my guitar. And I played the song in its entirety. Yeah. And when I was done, I said, what the hell did I just play, man? You know, did I steal this song? And I started playing, you know, different composers and listening, and I was like, nope. I was like, how did I know this 4 minute song ish you know? And I thought, you know, wow, what a gift that the Creator gave me. You know, through tragedy there was still something beautiful.
Yeah.
So I decided to title it 1219. And the reason, because I don't think there was any word in any language that could really best describe what I felt that morning. hope nobody ever felt. So rather than try to title it, I just marked it as the date, December 19th. And for me, it was a tough piece to play. To date, I've only played it maybe four or five times out in public because it's such an emotional piece to me. Again, it brings back those memories, you know, visual and emotional,
yeah.
You know, of what others went through that day as well as myself. So that I can say is a very, you know, pivotal moment in my life musically, yeah, as well, you know. So yeah, so 12/19.
It's amazing how the things that lead and feed into the creative incubation, even out of tragedy comes beauty. Kind of, I guess, that idea of the sacrifice and the bliss.
Exactly. Yeah. Well put.
Let's see here. Did I ask you what kind of research you do when you're cultivating a piece and developing a piece? What kind of research do you do on these?
You know, none at all, bro.
It's just life itself is kind of the inspiration, eh?
Again, yeah. Again, sometimes, like you say, you think you're going to go in there in the driver's seat and realize that you're not. Sometimes, you know, when I'm painting, you know, it's the same thing. You know, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm going to create this type of scene. And the next thing I know, I look at it and I was like, I had no idea that's what I was really painting, you know. I guess it's kind of like the sculptor, you know, removing the clay to see what's under there, you know, and it's the same thing as a painter, you know, of just putting the colors that needed to be there. And I think it's that way for everything that I do in life, you know. I'm not saying I'm a fly by the seat of my pants type guy, because I do have structure through my business, you know, etiquette, and the way that I see myself. But when it comes to art, I don't want to try to limit it to a form or a structured composition, you know, just because in theory it works doesn't mean that I need to create that way. Again, I'd rather just let things, you know, kind of manifest naturally and then tweak it at the end, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Well, brother, I really appreciate you coming on tonight. Absolutely. Whenever you got something more going on and when that book's about to come out, you know, please come back. I'd love to have you on, and I'm sure the audience will love to hear you again.
Yeah, no, that'd be great, man. And for anybody out there that wants to be one of my stalkers, follow me out everywhere. You know, I'm on Instagram and I don't really use it, but I got it, you know.
what is some ways that folks can get in touch with you, or they can purchase your work, or they can see you live?
For sure. I've branded myself as Ayala Guitarist. So AYALAGUITARIST. They just Google that or get on Yahoo and search engine and type in Ayala Guitarist. Everything will come up, from my Twitter to my website to Instagram to Facebook, full concert calendar, everything. And for those people that want to download my music, I'm available on iTunes and also CD Baby, but I'm on Spotify, Pandora, all those kind of cool stuff, you know. But again, it's not always just about the money. It's more about the giving back. So somebody's interested and you can't afford a CD, you know, hit me up, send me a message. I'll send you a free download. I mean, it's that simple, man. I mean, again, if I wanted to be a millionaire, I would have been a doctor, man. I wouldn't have been an artist. But I got into the business of sharing and creating. And again, I have to live, you know, those words, you know, throughout my life, man. I can't be a hypocrite. So again, if you really want some of my music, but the pocketbook just doesn't allow it, send me a message, man. I'll get you some free music. That's our traditional way. We're supposed to give back until you can't give anymore, and then you still give more. So again, reach out. I love connecting with new people, you know, and just sharing life. And I appreciate, again, the opportunity to come on and share just a little insight of who I am.
All right, my man. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, of course, brother.
Thank you for coming on again, Gabriel. I really do appreciate it. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Please continue to listen. This will continue to evolve and get better. And a big thank you to Jared Tate for the music interludes. I think that this project is going along really well and is getting ever better. Keep on sending your emails and suggestions, and I will continue to get back to you. Thank you all. Peace to let you.